With an Ohio Bias presents NASCAR Talk with Justin Bradley, episode 4, and we're going to be looking at the Bristol Night Races. I'm D and co-host, and Justin, welcome in. Exciting times at the track up north with Kyle Larson winning in overtime.
Yeah, what a great finish, and that's definitely a boost for his team. They needed that win, and if you're a Martin Truex fan, not really happy this week, but you got to believe that he's going to have a lot more shots at victory. But, man, what a win by Larson. He went up there and just took it. That was Martin Truex's race, and Larson said, I'm going to take this, and he did. And he has a stronghold on the track up north now. And, again, I maybe should have picked him, but I thought Chase was going to win it. But, hey, Larson, these two-mile tracks, man, he's the king of them right now.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the track up north and that exciting race. A quick look at the playoff standings and the guys trying to fight for those last three spots. The movement that's possible there. We'll continue to look at the Darlington throwback schemes. An exciting one this week. We're going to look at Danica Patrick's and get you ready, of course, for the night races in Bristol. Back to the track up north. It looked like Keselowski had this race again. The home state guy, and even Eric Jones was running well in that race. And you know, that story was a lot. You know, a guy who grew up, you know, not too far away from there. He was driving back and forth to see his mom. The story about his dad dying. I think that was a nice little narrative for just some of the other guys in that race.
Yeah, and it's always good for these drivers to win at their home tracks. I've heard Clint Boyer say before, winning at Kansas would be bigger than winning the Daytona 500. There's something about where you're from. You really want to win for those hometown fans. I know Denny Hamlin's done it at Richmond and Martinsville. Jimmy Johnson's done it in California. And Kyle Busch did it in Las Vegas not too long ago. So it's really big for the drivers to want to run well in front of their home fans. Keselowski just had a little bit of problems there at the end. For whatever reason, it seems like these guys are always up front, his team, but they just can't finish strong like they want to, and I'm not sure what's going on there. I think maybe just rolling the dice a little because they know they're in the chase and they're going for wins. You got to admire that.
Now, two observations from me, the casual NASCAR fan. One, I remember Kyle Larson either winning that pole or doing very well at that Charlotte All-Star race on that Saturday, and I think that helped him with that quick restart. I mean, his whole team went crazy, and one of the best celebrations I've seen since, you know, coming back watching NASCAR, the way he smoked out and everything. But also, too, I think about the debris that was on the track and kind of the way that race finished. I mean, we talked about it off-cast. A little confusing, the overtime rules NASCAR has with the restarts. And you told me something interesting. If Kyle Larson hadn't won in that fashion, they would have restarted that race. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I think the new rule is that the overtime line is now the start-finish line, which means they can have possibly unlimited attempts. Now, I don't know exactly. I'm like you. I'm confused as well, and I've watched it for years, and I watch it every week. I mean, this is something they keep changing, but I think the deal is still that if the leader takes the white flag and the caution comes out, then the race is over. So they will do as many green-white checkers as it takes, though, to get it right. So if they don't make it back around to take the white flag, then they're going to restart the race again. So, you know, I agree, actually, with them moving the start-finish line, moving the restart line to the start-finish line. I think that's a better deal. I think there's a lot of confusion involved previously. Still going to be a little bit of confusion at first, but, you know, we'll all get the hang of it. We've all gotten used to the stage races. I'm sure we'll figure this out pretty quickly. It'll take a couple of weeks, but we'll be like, oh, you know, the light will click for everybody and it'll click for the drivers. And I think, though, it does create a bigger sense of urgency. And you saw that with Larson saying, man, I need to get this win. And he went up there and took it.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. And Amy, he shot between two cars. I mean, it was that's a pretty exciting overtime. I mean, some of them stink in sports, but that one, actually, I kind of like the thrilling fashion of forcing guys to really fight for that, you know, position off that jump. We talk about a guy, though. You talk about the stages. Martin Truex Jr., he's killing it in points, and all he does is win stages. Is this some type of strategy, or is he just built for the way NASCAR is formatted now with the stage racing?
I mean, he's just fast. There's no getting around that. And I know that we're going to talk a little bit about Toyota here in a little bit, but, you know, Truex is just playing fast, and this system rewards the drivers who are running up front, and you see that in the point standings. the guys who are always up front, leading laps, they're doing well in the stages, they're getting the points, and they're situating themselves well. So Martin Truex has taken complete advantage of it, and whether you like it or not, he's definitely right now the king of stage racing. And going back to your point on that thrilling overtime finish, a lot of fans, I noticed, were really excited about the call of that with Lee Diffie. And you go back and you watch those, that final restart, Lee Diffie's call is definitely, man, that'll give you some chills. So really a heads up for him. Great job that he's done filling in for Rick Allen in the booth.
I thoroughly enjoyed the race. Let's get to the thing that you just mentioned, though. Everybody hates Toyota. It was people were blowing up because it looked like you said, Truex was going to finish this one. And, of course, with the debris on the track and the oil and stuff, they got a couple cautions and stopped it and restarted it. But why does everybody hate Toyota, even though Kyle Larson and that Chevy car did get the win?
Well, I think it's a multitude of things. I think you have a lot of folks who hate Kyle Busch. We know that. We know Kyle Busch is not the most popular driver in the garage. He's not the most popular driver with the fans. It's just he drives a Toyota, and that kind of hurts their brand a little bit. I think number two is that a lot of traditional NASCAR fans don't like Toyota because they don't perceive it maybe as an American brand like Ford, Chevy, and Dodge, and Pontiac who've been in the sport. Again, though, you will notice that the Toyota Camry is built in the United States. Again, though, you know, a lot of fans still kind of a little bit rubbed the wrong way by Toyota, even though they've been in the series for 10 years. And I think the third reason is that a lot of fans think that Toyota pretty much has gotten the candy store from NASCAR. And what I mean by that is that they think that NASCAR is helping Toyota get a little bit faster than everybody else. And you look at Michigan, the race in Michigan is a prime example of that. Truex was up front the whole time, but Team Hendrick surprised me because Chase Elliott didn't run very well. Jimmy Johnson, mediocre. Earnhardt Jr., he was nowhere to be found, and Casey Kane got in a wreck, and he really wasn't running that well either. So you look at that, and you see that that's kind of sparked a little bit of a feud, even more so between Keselowski and Kyle Busch, because they've been trading barbs about manufacturers and stuff like that. So I think it's a multitude of reasons why people don't like Toyota. I think they're just kind of itching to see some new makes win some races. And, you know, I look for Jimmy Johnson and those guys to be strong in the final 10 races anyway. So I really don't think you get too worried right now, even if you're fearing like a Toyota is going to win the title, because it's still wide open.
Wide open indeed. I'm pretty sure the people at Ford were disappointed they didn't win that race that they used to sponsor there in Michigan. But you talk about, you know, Casey Kane crashing, you know, a couple other guys did not finish. What's the impact on that on a race, on a racing team? What's the impact of that on a racing team? And that stat, you talked about Duffy on the call, Michael McDowell not finishing that race. And they threw out that stat of him so far during this season. He had completed 99.1% of the laps and didn't get to finish there at Michigan International Speedway. What's the impact on that for his career? And is there an Ironman streak, a NASCAR that you think of when we think about that stat?
Yeah, I mean, Ironman more talks about the consecutive starts. You've had Richard Petty held the record, Terry Labonte. I remember that silver car in 1996 that he ran for a couple of races. He won North Wilkesboro in that car. And then Ricky Rudd was the Ironman for a while, and then Jeff Gordon took that over. He never missed a start in his entire career. So that's more what they're talking about with Ironman. As far as what a DNF does to a race team, well, if you're already in the playoffs, doesn't really hurt you that much. You just have to build a new car from scratch. Now, if it's your best car that you want to save for down the road, it's going to hurt you a little bit. Maybe it could have championship implications. So, you know, it still is a big deal to the guys. And even if Danica were in the chase, you know, that would be a big deal for her. And then again, you look at Michael McDowell. It just shows what caliber of a driver he is, that he's able to run all those laps in an underfunded car. And he's run pretty well in several races this year, not just the plate track. So Michael McDowell has a lot of talent. I think if he had a top-notch ride, you'd see him win a lot of races. I mean, the guy is really, really good, really nice guy. And, you know, that is kind of an unfortunate thing, especially for an underfunded team, because they don't have the resources to replace their cars like a Hendrick or a Gibbs.
You mentioned some of the guys racing at the back of that playoff hunt. Let's go through it. Matt Kenseth, Kent Boyer, I don't believe they finished either in that race. How does that impact them coming down for that playoff hunt? And Daniel Suarez didn't finish either, so he had a bad crash. What do these guys got to do to try to finish up? We know Bristol's coming up. We'll get to your predictions for that, but they're going to be under the gun going all the way through September.
Yeah, they've got to win. There's just no choice now. And Kenseth had an opportunity the last couple of weeks to win. He's had opportunities the last 4 or 5 weeks to win, and for whatever reason can't get it done. Him hitting the wall late was a big-time disappointment for him. Clint Bowyer, same thing. Daniel Suarez, he just kind of got caught up there. Casey Kane thought he was clear, got into Suarez, and that really is a shame for him. But they have to win. There's just no choice in the matter. I think Logano still is a threat to win, even though he hasn't been running well, because he always runs well at Richmond. He won at Richmond, albeit they took the advantage away from him. It was encumbered. So, again, you have to, if you're Kenseth, Bowyer, and Suarez, you're thinking, I have to win.
How big of an impact can that be for Suarez, being a rookie, to propel his career to start out with a playoff appearance?
Well, I think it would be a big thing for him. It's been done before. Denny Hamlin made it as a rookie, actually won the Bud Shootout when he was a rookie as well. So for Suarez, though, he's not going to be really held to that kind of standard, I don't think, because everyone understands, hey, this guy has never run a cup car before. Denny Hamlin had several starts before he ran, and you used to see these guys before they made a full rookie campaign run 5 to 7 races a year. I remember Kurt Busch did it in 2000. And you go back to some of those other guys who kind of, like Chase Elliott, got a little bit of experience before his full rookie year. So Suarez actually really hadn't started maybe but 1 or 2 races, maybe 0. I'm not really sure on the details on that before his full rookie campaign. So, you know, he's not going to be held to that kind of standard, but in terms of the way he's run, I think he's exceeded expectations in that 19 car.
All right, we're going to take a look at another one of these great throwback paint schemes for the Darlington Bojangles 500 coming up there. Got to get that sponsor in there, Bojangles. Great biscuits, great chicken. I am not getting paid for that, but I just like Bojangles. Danica Patrick and her team, they're going to honor Robert Yates, and I know you're fired up about that, Justin.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite race cars, and Dale Jarrett made it famous, and he won the first time out, albeit at my man's expense, the Daytona 500, 96. Unfortunately, Earnhardt didn't get it done that day, but man, Dale Jarrett just had a rocket ship, and who can forget Ned calling him home for a second time in Daytona, but that car was pretty awesome. I love the look of it. I love the look of the throwback. I think it could have used a little bit more red than it has on it, but it's one of my favorite throwback schemes, definitely. And you look at what Dale Jarrett did in that car. He won most of his races in that car. He won the 1999 Cup Championship in it, and he had a lot of success, and I would really like to see Danica run well. I'm not sure that she will since it's Darlington, but she surprised people with some better runs at some of the tougher tracks, so I'm not saying it's out of the question, but I really do like that throwback scheme. Another one I love is Brad Keselowski's Rusty Wallace throwback. That is one of the most beautiful cars in NASCAR history, that solid black and gold No. 2. Miller Genuine Draft car, I love that one. I love the Wrangler throwback for Austin Dillon. I like Earnhardt Jr.'s Busch Series throwback. So we got a lot of good-looking cars coming up at Darlington. And I think Jimmy Johnson released his today. It's an old Lowe's truck design. It looks really sweet, kind of like Kevin Harvick's in a way, too. So a lot of good throwbacks out there. Again, I'm just holding out for one day seeing that black and silver No. 3 come back. That'd be pretty sweet for me, but you know, really good throwbacks. Danica's, though, I think is the highlight of this week. Even though Jimmy Johnson released his, I really think that Danica's is really, really sharp.
All right, let's get to the excitement of Bristol and the night race there. Your favorite, I love doing this part of the podcast because we can go to some of your favorite memories, or, you know, you dig into that encyclopedia of NASCAR and give us some great tips. So what you got about Bristol this week, Justin?
Bristol, anything can happen. And I want to tell you, if you've never had the opportunity to go to Bristol just to see the racetrack. It is an awesome experience. I know it's open a lot during the off season, It is one of the coolest things you'll ever do. And I remember I made a trip to Gatlinburg, Tennessee one year and just decided to stop off at the Speedway. And fortunately, it was open. Got to walk around, take some pictures, and you do not realize how steep those turns actually are. It is a workout walking around that racetrack. And it's only a half mile, so if you're thinking, man, I'll just take a jog around it, good luck with that, because everything about that place is steep and just amazing. And the stands feel like they come over top of you, so I can only imagine what it feels like to race there. As far as favorite memories, though, in the night race, well, you know, 1999 is one of those, you either loved Dale Earnhardt or you hated him when he raced. And a lot of people hated him that night because he wrecked Terry Labonte on the last lap. What it came down to was Earnhardt had the lead on a late restart. He stayed out. Of course, you know, he had to. He had no choice. Labonte, who had the dominant car the whole night, came in to get tires, runs Earnhardt down, passes him at the line on the last lap, bumps Earnhardt out of the way, and then drives so hard into turn one, Earnhardt says, I'm not lifting, okay? I'm just not going to do it. Plows Labonte, Labonte wrecks, Earnhardt wins, and that's the first time I had ever really heard Dale Earnhardt get seriously booed. And they did not like that. Fans did not like that at all. Another great night race. I want to go back to 2002. That, believe this or not. Now, I know you're a casual fan, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, you might not believe this. This is Jeff Gordon's only win in the Bristol night race. You believe that?
Wow.
Isn't that something? That's the only time he won it, and he punted Rusty Wallace out of the way. And that's the second time that he had done that at Bristol. He did it in 1997 in the spring race to Rusty Wallace, of all people, again. And it's still hard for me to believe that's the only time Jeff won that race, but hey, at least he has that trophy on his mantle. Earnhardt Jr. also, he won that in 04, which is pretty cool for his fans. And another epic Bristol night race that I think a lot of people have forgotten about is Kurt Busch's win in 2003. Now, the story behind that was that he and Jimmy Spencer had this long-running feud that culminated the week before with Busch just finally getting on Jimmy Spencer's nerves enough to provoke Jimmy Spencer to punch him in the face. And the next week, Jimmy Spencer got suspended for the Bristol race, and the fans just turned on Kurt Busch like crazy. And that was probably the biggest booze I've ever heard in a NASCAR victory lane ever, when that man won that race, Kurt Busch, in 2003. So, I mean, if you're looking for sparks, you're going to get it in the Bristol night race.
Well, it's definitely entertainment. I mean, everybody needs a villain. You know, you need a heel, you need a baby face, as they say in wrestling. So
yeah,
definitely
that's right.
That there. All right, let's get the prediction. Who's going to come up big in Bristol?
I don't know. Bristol's awfully tough to predict. But going off the spring race, Jimmy Johnson ran away with it. You know, he's one of my favorites to win. I think if you have a fantasy racing team, the first person you go after is Jimmy Johnson. You know, you just have to. The guy's won 7 championships in 83 races. I look at some other guys who run well there, Keselowski, Logano, Kevin Harvick. I actually think that it's going to be someone who needs a win. And that person who needs a win is Joey Logano, because he has the encumbered win from Richmond. I think Joey Logano wins at Bristol.
Wow. Wow, that's big. I thought you were going to say Matt Kenseth would get it together, but definitely it would be impressive if Joey Logano pulls that one out. All right, what else you want to leave the folks with this episode of the podcast?
Yeah, like I said, if you get a chance to see Bristol in person, you should definitely do it. I did post some photos from my trip there in 2014 on Twitter. You can find them somewhere. It's a pretty epic experience. Now, I will tell you, it's one of my favorite venues in all of sports, but it's still, I think Martinsville edges it just a little bit, just because it's Martinsville. I love Martinsville. It was the first time I'd ever seen a full NASCAR race, and Earnhardt won it that year, so that was pretty sweet for me. So Martinsville has always had a special spot in my heart. But again, if you get a chance to go see a race at Bristol or you can go visit the track, I recommend you do that.
And we want to thank you to all the fans. I had some fun going back and forth with people during the races on Sunday, and we'll definitely be getting on the old Twitter machine come Saturday night for the big race in Bristol. You can always follow us at With an Ohio Bias and on Twitter, and give us a like on Facebook, With an Ohio Bias. Just put that in there, and you can definitely find us. And we're always have this podcast available at withanohiobias.com. On iTunes, you can just search With an Ohio Bias and subscribe and write us a review even. And we'd be happy if you do the same on Stitcher and also on Google Play, where this podcast is available too. Justin, give your social media links just so people can follow you.
Yeah, still the same thing. 2 Justin Bradley for Twitter and 3 Justin Bradley for Instagram. So we'd like to have you along with us. Again, I'm not like Kyle Busch. If you have a different opinion than me, I'm going to respect it. And I'm actually, like I said, I like to hear other people's thoughts on the races because I'm not always right. Nobody's always right all the time, but it's always interesting to hear everybody's perspective on it. And, you know, you find out reasons why they like someone or don't like someone. And again, I don't really have any drivers I hate. So I'm always objective when I look at it. I do have some guys I pull for, but like I said, always objective, always interested to hear everybody's thoughts on the races and poke a little fun at people sometimes. I remember this lady was so angry because she thought Toyota was going to win, and I quote tweeted her and I said, well, a Chevy won today.
It's just fun to
have fun with people and just good old-fashioned clean humor.
Oh, yeah, always in good nature, so definitely mix it up with us out there on the old social media. We thank you for listening to this edition of NASCAR Talk with Justin Bradley, and we will talk at you next time.